Hello there, folks. It's Cliff and John back together again to give you a brief rundown on the news and the sports world as best we can. And apologies from me for missing out last time, but I had this horrible chesty, flu-y thing that put me in bed for a week. So we're back to normal. Or, well, I've never been normal, but back to as normal as I can be. So we crack on, folks. And it's the women's football that I wanted to draw your attention to first. And WSL players to be paid a guaranteed minimum salary. At long last, it looks like the women are going to get something like parity with the men, but nothing near just yet. But the article in The Guardian says that the senior women's Super League players will be guaranteed a minimum annual salary of £40,000 under new financial rules brought in this season. The salary floor has different levels depending on the age of the player and whether the club is in the first or second division of the Women's League, but those aged 23 and over in the top flight will receive at least £40,000, which is very good news for them. This means now that they can be full-time footballers rather than having to supplement their income and all their training time with work time as well. So the senior players' salary floor is higher than the minimum wage in the United States National Women's Soccer League, which is about £36,000, and it reinforces the WSL's position as the preeminent women's league and is also committed to increasing its minimum salary by 2030. So English clubs are increasingly competing with their American counterparts to sign the top women players. There have been four signings by English clubs in excess of $1 million, which is £870,000, they tell me. I can't work it out. With Chelsea breaking the world record to sign a USA defender, Naomi Gurmi, in February for £900,000. The rules are an attempt to equalise potential spending between those clubs and teams such as London City while encouraging investment. It is understood that the additional funding cap has been set at £4 million, which will allow owners without revenue stream from men's clubs to invest in their squads without creating a free-for-all, which is a good sign because a lot of the clubs, the women's clubs, are aligned to the mainly the Premier League clubs in the men's league. So, but there are still clubs trying to struggle along without that help and without that support. So good luck to the girls. And just one quick result there on the women's football. The Arsenal, who the reigning European champions, Arsenal women, began their title defence with defeat to last year's semi-final opponents, Lyons, in a thrilling encounter in North London. Rennie Sliger's team had taken the lead in style through Alessia Russo early on against the tournament's most decorated team, but two goals in 7 minutes from Melchi Duomoni, courtesy of some questionable defending, gave the visitors' side all 3 points. And a fourth game without a win is a blow for the Gunners, which withdraws against Manchester United and Aston Villa, followed by a defeat to Manchester City in the league prior to this meeting. And that's the European competition, of course, that they are playing for. So a bad start for Arsenal, but it's a league basis thing. So there's plenty of time for them to pick up and improve on that. So over to you, John. Some local news about fortunate Stoke fans doing a lot better, I think.
Yes, we are. And it's hi, folks, John here again with your sports roundup. And apologies, as some of these games are covered in the last update, but I'll go through them again with you in some details. And as Cliff said, we start with Stoke City. As usual, who are revelling at the moment at being near the top of the league, which is a breakthrough for us, as we're normally relishing at the bottom. Like, Stoke were at home to Birmingham, winning 1-0, with B. Laurel scoring in the 21st minute. Their next game was away to QPR, losing 1-0. Stoke's next game was at home to Norwich, drawing 1-1. And no ifs or buts, we should have won this game. They were then away to Middlesbrough, drawing 0-0. Again, points dropped. Their next game was away to Blackburn Rovers, drawing 1-1. This game, Stoke dominated, but again falling to a stupid mistake, letting Blackburn score. Stoke need, in my opinion, to start to look after at themselves in front of goal. And again, when we're in front of goal, we start passing instead of having a shot. And this is very frustrating at times to the fans. This leaves Stoke fifth in the league. We've played 9, won 4, drawn 3 and lost 2, and we have 15 points. And it's over to you, Cliff.
Thank you, John. As you say, it's early days yet, isn't it, for the league? There's lots and lots of matches to go, but it's like most clubs, they've got lots of new players in at Stoke. It takes a while to get the new systems settled in, doesn't
it? This is it.
So moving back to cricket again, and to women's sport again, and it's women's cricket, which is the World Cup, is currently taking place at the moment in India and Sri Lanka. And England survived a very nervy wobble with the bat to beat Bangladesh by 4 wickets to go top of the table at the World Cup. It's again, there's 8 teams, they each play each other, and the top 4 will go through to the semi-finals and the final. But Bangladesh reduced England to 103 for 6, chasing 179. But a late 79-run partnership between Heather Knight and Charlie Dean steadied the ship, helped by the absence of Bangladesh's key strike bowler, Maroofa Akhtar, for the last 15 overs. Nevertheless, the performance will raise questions as to how far England have overcome the issues which dogged them under the previous coach, notably their ability to focus in pressure moments. And Bangladesh are a nation who scraped through the qualifiers for the World Cup back in April. They've played no international cricket since then, and their domestic structure is still almost entirely amateur. So we got away with it on that one, and I guess that's the answer, isn't it? If you can't win well, then just win. And certainly the English women have done that, and hopefully will continue to progress in the tournament on there. And just back to Arsenal again, on a short story, John, before I hand back to you. But this is Arsenal Football Club as a whole, which is the Emirates Stadium. And Arsenal are exploring the possibility of expanding their Emirates Stadium in a move that could restore its status as the biggest club ground in London. It currently has a 60,000 capacity, placing it behind Tottenham and West Ham's homes, which were built after Arsenal moved to from Highbury in 2006. But there's believed to be an appetite from the club's American owners to increase that to 70,000, which would, of course, significantly boost matchday revenues. And there are more than 100,000 supporters on the waiting list for Arsenal season tickets. And Arsenal set up a working group to examine the feasibility. So back to you, John, with Port Vale, I think.
Yeah, and you know that one about Arsenal there. When Arsene Wenger was their manager, he made a statement when we used to play him in the Premier League, and he come down, he sooner walked down up the M6 with a nail in his shoe than come down Stoke, because he always had the mickey taken out of him.
He wasn't a very popular visitor,
no,
was he? He criticised Stoke in some length.
Yes.
Yeah, he got his own back. Well, Stoke fans got their own back, didn't they? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Right, thanks, Cliff. Right, now we come to Port Vale, who were still seeking their first win, and it was surely about to come. They were home to Leighton Orient, losing 3-2. Then away to Exeter, winning 2-0. Then home to Mansfield, winning 2-1. Were the Mansfield players sent off in the 14th minute of this game? Vale then played at home to Arsenal in the EFL Cup, losing 2-0. They were then away to Barnsley, winning 2-0. Port Vale then played Rushall Olympic, never heard of that one before, in the Staff Senior Cup first round, drawing 2-2, but losing 4-2 on penalties. Vale were then at home to Northampton Town, drawing 0-0. Their next game was away to Accrington Stanley, and there's a joke about that, but I won't go there, in the Football League Trophy group stage, winning 2-0. With Accrington having a player sent off in the 78th minute. This leaves Vale 16th in the table, which is well away from the bottom now. They've played 11, won 3, drawn 3, lost 5 with 12 points. And at least now they're climbing up the table. Over to you, Cliff.
Thanks, John. Excuse me. A tennis story now, which is again about England's number one women's player, Emma Raducanu, and her brutal run of form and luck in Asia continued at the Wuhan Open, as she was forced to retire because of illness from her first round match at the WTA 1000 event. She was trailing 6-1, 4-1 against the American Ann Lee. But Raducanu is the latest player to crumble in tough conditions across China, with temperatures rising to 31 degrees and with 67% humidity in Wuhan. Raducanu looked out of sorts throughout the match before getting her blood pressure checked late in the second set and citing dizziness as the main reason for her retirement. And Jannik Sinner, the men's world number two, was forced to retire from his third round match at the Shanghai Masters on Sunday. Raducanu, who you'll remember, I think, was the first British player to win a Grand Slam event, and she won the American one about 3-4 years ago when she was still a teenager, if memory serves me right. But her mum is Chinese, and she's repeatedly expressed her excitement in competing in Asia, and after being injured at this point of the season over the past few years, this marks the 22-year-old's first full Asian swing. But it has turned into quite a disastrous series of tournaments, with Raducanu enduring her worst result since February. This miserable afternoon in Wuhan had been preceded by two excruciating defeats against top opponents. Raducanu held 3 match points against the two-time Grand Slam title winner Barbara Krejcikova in the second round at the Korean Open before falling away in a one-sided third set. Then she endured an identical scenario at the China Open last week. Apologies, folks, that's my phone going off. After losing against Jessica Pegula in the third round, after also holding 3 match points.
Thanks, Cliff. Right, now Stoke and Vale are out of the way, we turn to Crewe, who were at home to Chesterfield in the Football League Trophy, winning 7-1. They were then away to Colchester, drawing 1-1. Crewe were at home to Barnet, losing 2-1, then away to Barrow, losing 1-0. Their next game was at home to Notts County, winning 2-1, and finally away to Harrogate, winning 2-1. With Crewe dominating this game, this leaves Crewe fifth in the table. They've played 11, won 6, drawn 1, and lost 4 with 19 points. Well, folks, hope the strats give you thought about your clubs, and good luck to all the 3 clubs. Stay safe, keep well and warm. Until next time, goodbye.
Thanks very much, John. Great update on all the local major sport there with the football. And just sticking to football briefly, England want to face South America and Asian opposition as part of their World Cup preparations, and have discussed Wembley friendlies against Uruguay and Japan in March as Thomas Tuchel's side close in on qualification for the finals next summer. England have mostly faced European opposition since Tuchel took charge at the start of this year, and there is need to test themselves against different styles of football before the World Cup. And just as an opener tonight at Wembley, that's Wednesday, they are playing a friendly because the big football's closed down again. It's another international break, so there's another fortnight off for all the other football teams so that they can prepare for the World Cup. And it's nothing really. It's a friendly against Wales at Wembley this evening, which won't be too eye-shattering, I don't think. But that's the way it is at the moment. The business is running the football as usual. So just to go back then, finally for me, John, thanks for your contribution.
Yes.
I've got a brief story about rugby union. And as John was saying, we've had the sad news this week that one of the stars of England rugby union has been diagnosed with motor neurone disease at the young age of 46, I think it is, which is a sad blow. We've already lost two rugby players, one from Rugby Union and one from Rugby League, I think, to MND not too long ago. But there's a new shake-up going on in the rugby world, and business again is raising its head. Global rugby's biggest unions have gone on the attack against a rebel R360 organisation that is seeking to poach the game's leading stars. England, Ireland, Scotland, France and Italy, along with New Zealand, Australia and South Africa, made it very clear that players who join this proposed new competition will be ineligible for international selection. But the backers of this new business, fronted by the former England international Mike Tindall, had been hoping to launch their multiplicity franchise tournament next year, but have now been told to back off in no uncertain terms. "We are urging extreme caution for players and support staff considering joining this competition," read the statement issued by the leading unions. "We all welcome new investment and innovation in rugby and support ideas that can help the game evolve and reach new audience, but any new competition must not fragment or weaken the sport. And amongst our roles as national unions, we must take a wider view on new propositions and assess their impact on a range of areas, including whether they are a net negative to the game." So the model appears designed just to generate profits, which we've seen about in football, haven't we, with the major clubs being taken over by Americans and Arabs in Saudi Arabia, all sorts of different non-British people there running the show, unfortunately. But they're saying with this that it's a very small elite, and potentially it will hollow out the investment the national unions and existing leagues make in community rugby and in the most important aspects of player development down the path into the young amateurs and the youngsters. "International rugby and our major competitions remain the financial and cultural engine that sustains every level of the games," they say. "Undermining that ecosystem could be enormously harmful to the health of our sport." So good luck to Rugby Union if they're trying to keep forward their local organisations a little better without interference.
But again, Cliff, it's money talking again.
Absolutely right, John. It's very sad, isn't it? But
it's a shame that it's, when you look at all the sports, darts, bowls, cricket, football, rugby, netball, anything now, It's money talking all the while.
That's it, mate. It's the TV revenues again, isn't it? Yeah. They run it in. But there we go. So thanks very much for your time, folks, today. I hope you're all safe and well. And John and I look forward to coming back to you in another couple of weeks and give you a roundup of what we can find that's going on locally and nationally. Thank you.